This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And we're going to talk to John Williams today. He's written a book called Word Nerd, Dispatches from the Games, Grammar, and Geek Underground. And it's just published from Live Right. Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm well, thank you very much.
Now, this is a division of Houghton Mifflin, right? Live Right.
It's a division of Norton.
Oh, Norton. Excuse me.
W. Norton.
Yep. Why do I have Norton, of course. Okay.
Yeah, it was an old. I guess it was a former division. It goes way, way back, and then it was somewhat sleepy for a while, and they've come back now and really bringing it back to the phone. So I'm happy to be part of it.
How did you get involved in writing this book? Did somebody approach you? Did you go to somebody, or how did this come about?
Well, I've written another book called Everything Scrabble about at least 10 or 12 years ago.
I remember that book.
Yeah, which is, you know, really done quite well. And when I decided to leave as head of the National Scrabble Association, it just made complete sense to write this as kind of a closure, a little bit of a memoir of the 25 or 30 years I spent, you know, with the game and stuff. So it was sort of a no-brainer.
So how much of an expert are you?
Well, I played at the expert level. So I think a handful of people that went from playing at my first Scrabble tournament and being eligible to play in the expert division from walking it off the street. So, you know, I've beaten the world champion. I've beaten the national champion. I'm currently ranked as an intermediate. I haven't played in a while, but I have played at the expert level a few times. So I'm pretty good.
You must have a high IQ to be able to... Is it a result of having played for so many years? How does that work? I mean, you seem pretty intelligent to begin with, so I would assume you have a Mensa-type ability.
I don't know for sure. There's certainly no shortage of Mensa members in the Scrabble Association, that's for sure. You know, I had a pretty good skill set for it. I was a really a very serious poker player for a long time. Poker and Scrabble are very similar in many ways, cards and card games in general. And my family were word people, and I just sort of brought this mixed bag skill set to it. So, and then I had the good fortune of being taught the game by one of the best players in history. So it all kind of came together for me. So I definitely had the potential.
Do you have an amazing memory for words? In other words, can you come up with words right off the bat? Just, I mean, you have a lot of words in your head. I mean, I know when I play, I know when I play words with friends, and you may, right. I know you don't. I know you think Scrabble's a lot better than Words with Friends, and I think I do too. But
yeah.
Well, first of all, you have more of a chance. I mean, with Words with Friends, the board is barely big enough to do everything you want to do on it, but. But do you...
Well, Words with Friends is a little dumbed down. You know, it enables you to score a lot more. You know, it's about scoring bigger numbers, but it's not as challenging as real Scrabble, in my opinion. But
it's challenging in its own way, having to find spaces when the board is so tiny to begin with. You know, that's the
right.
Challenge of it, to be able to find and to be able to connect the words. And I mean, I love words. I'm a big word person. I mean, just like
uh-huh.
you. And I'm totally fascinated by words and what is a word and what isn't a word. And you look at a word and you think, that's a word? You know, and people tend to be like that. They'll say, well, what does that mean? Define that word, you know, and they're questioning your ability.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book yet, but I get into that a lot in terms of probably the single biggest topic of phone calls I got for 25 years was always people calling up complaining that something was a word, they didn't think it was a word. Then I got into how a word gets into the dictionary and all that kind of stuff. Just because you don't know it, it doesn't mean it's not a word. And some words do sound very improbable. A word like CWM three-letter word with no vowel. People were sort of...
CWM. Now, that's actually a word.
It is. It means a, I believe it means a deep-walled basin in Wales.
How can you possibly remember all these definitions of all these words? I mean, I think your vocabulary of words has got to be amazing.
I'm certainly better than the average person, for sure, but not as good as the real top experts basically have the entire dictionary memorized. They know 150,000 words or more. The average person, the English speaker, I think, knows about 30,000 or 40,000. So, I know what I do know is all the trick words, the Q words without U's, or the words that have a disproportionate amount of vowels that we call a vowel dump, words like that. I know, the J kick, a lot of obscure J, Q, X, and Z words, because you can score a lot of points with those. So, what I don't know is things like the low probability nines, which means a nine-letter word that might have a U, a V, a W, and in other words, maybe would never see it in your entire Scrabble career, but there are people that go out and learn it on the outside chance it may show up. So that's kind of where I personally drew the line. So, I know a lot of crazy words, no doubt about it.
Now, here's the thing with playing with words with friends. The thing is, if you come across somebody who's really good at the game, and you suddenly realize, I don't have a chance against this person unless you're on the same level they are. Now, I know there's one particular person on Words with Friends who the man, I don't know what he does. He must just play every day, all day, because he's got like 25,000 points already for the week. And it's like, does the guy do anything but play Words with Friends? And it's kind of like, when you play him, you feel like you don't even have a shot because he knows all these words you don't know. So knowing all the words is a huge help.
It's a big help. I mean, you have to know strategy as well, without question.
Making one word into another word and doubling and tripling your scores and all that stuff, putting yeses on the words.
Also seeing opportunity, knowing how to play your way through a bad rack, knowing when to turn, I don't play much Words with Friends, I don't know, but I assume you have this provision to turn in your tiles and miss your turn and
hopefully
draw better tiles. Yeah, that's a very important thing. There are some real fundamentals of strategy that can definitely help you even the playing field.
It's kind of when you get a rack of seven tiles and like five of them are eyes, you're in trouble.
that decision, that's an easy decision. Yeah, exactly. You just turn them in.
It's time to dump them, because not only do you lose that turn, you lose the next turn too. So you end up losing two or three turns.
You'll have a terrible hand for the next four racks.
Is it really that bad?
If you've got all those vowels, it's the first time I beat a national champion, I turned in my tiles three times in that game. Gave him three more turns than I had, and I still won because it was a smart thing to do. And when I turned in my tiles, I got a blank and an S and whatever, and worked out in my favor. So,
even if the other two tiles tend to be words you can add on to another word, you're still stuck with those five eyes. No matter what you do, you can't get rid of the eyes.
And so that's where the card analogy comes in. A good Scrabble move is comprised of what you put on the board to score and what you leave on your rack to work with. So, to your point, if you score, if you score 45 points in a good play, but you leave yourself a V, a W, and a U, your racks are going to be terrible. Your next couple racks are going to be terrible. So, always have to bear that in mind, that the most points isn't necessarily the best move by any means.
One of the joys of playing is when you get seven really good tiles, and you've got, if not a seventh point, a seven letter word, you have at least a six letter word. So it's really, and it's quite thrilling. It's like, where can I put this? What can I do with this word? And how can I really stick it to my opponent? I don't know if you like to reveal your secrets. I mean, as far as strategies, as far as helping other people out. But
I have no secrets. I'm happy to. I mean, my other book was all strategies, so everything's Scrabble, so it's no problem. It's the things that I've just mentioned. It's knowing there's a thing that I think you can find it on a site called crosstables.com. It's what the Scrabble Association members call the cheat sheet, and it's essentially the 1,200 to 1,500 best words you can learn for playing Scrabble. So the thing you do is you get a hold of that thing, and then you eliminate the words that you already know, and that'll be down to about 700-800 words. And if you learn those, you'll be a very good Scrabble player, and the fundamentals of strategy on top of that.
Crosstables.com, we're going to have to look at that. As a word person, I just love learning new words. I love the combination of letters. I mean, everything about words. I mean, you mentioned, you even talk about the game show Scrabble with Chuck Woolery, which is one of my favorites, and which they never show on TV now. It's like they've totally abandoned the show.
I mean, absolutely.
And it's a shame because it was a really fascinating show.
It wasn't bad. It was a little too much like Hangman for the average. The funny story happened, actually. The Chuck Woolery people came and spent a week with us back in 1985, and they wanted to have real Scrabble experts on the show playing regular people that are game show contestants. And they found about maybe 8 or 10 Scrabble experts they felt were telegenic enough and had enough personality and all that. And they went out and competed in the show, and most of them got their butts kicked by regular game show contestants.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
But what's the fun in you? And I mean, you know so much that for you to play the average person, they wouldn't have a chance against you.
That's not true. I've had people come in off the street and beat me.
Is that true? I mean, but most of the time, you know a lot more strategy than they would know a lot of time.
Yeah, I'm going to be. I usually, when somebody tells me, I meet somebody and they say, well, I'm a very good Scrabble player, I always say, well, let's play. And I usually beat them because they don't. The what we call the living room game versus the tournament game is very different. You know, it's probably the biggest challenge facing the Scrabble Association when I ran it is that people would consider themselves good Scrabble players, and they were good Scrabble players, and they would beat all their friends and family members, and then they would hear about a local Scrabble club, and they would show up, and they'd get killed, and were so discouraged they'd never come back.
Well, that's the thing. If you play somebody continually and lose every game, to still have the fun, that's the real players, the people who lose and still come back and play again.
Well, Scrabble can be fun when you lose. You know, it's a lot. I'm not a golfer, but golfing friends tell me, you know, if they play, they might play 18 holes, and they're like on three of the holes they go below par and have an amazing whatever. But it's still a worthwhile experience, and the same in Scrabble. You know, you can play somebody, maybe you lose, but you made an amazing play, you learned a word, you figured something out you didn't know before, so, everyone wants to win, but you can still have fun playing Scrabble if you don't win.
I loved reading about your experiences on the different shows, the Jon Stewart show and Jimmy Kimmel's, and it just goes to show me what they do on these shows to really provide entertainment and how particular they are that you have something to sell something to sell on the show. What's what they're looking for? Either a movie or whatever, you know, the actors come on to sell their movies or their
exactly.
books or their something they're doing for charity or, you know, something like that. But, I mean, they work so hard. I mean, I remember reading about David Letterman, how his show was all planned out in advance. And I used to watch it thinking, oh, this is so cool. It's like watching live TV, but it isn't because they plan everything in advance on that show.
Right.
They did anyway.
They make it look effortless and all that, but it's unbelievable how much preparation goes into that. I mean, and the people that work on those shows basically have no life outside of their job. It's so time-consuming.
You think, boy, they only work an hour a day because the shows only are an hour a day. But it is. There's so much behind-the-scenes stuff, so much
planning
in advance.
They do it every day. You know, they have to do it the next day. I mean, it's crazy how much goes into it.
And to have to be original every day of the week. I mean, you have to come up with something new, like, all the time. You're continually coming up with something all the time. But I found that, you know, I'm reading that, it kind of irritated me about these shows, you know, that they can't just have a guest on and see what happens. You know, it has to be something interesting. Like, what do you? I know when on Johnny Carson's show, they used to ask people that would come on, what are you going to do? What are you going to say to Johnny? What are you going to talk about? It's like everything's planned in advance. You can't, you know, it's not like, well, at least on Letterman, when Drew Barrymore was on and she, you know, she revealed herself, I don't think they knew that was going to happen. That was kind of unplanned.
Yeah, every once in a while something comes, but they usually have it pretty set up in terms of, I'm going to ask you these questions. Or even if you have a comedian, you can notice that there's a comedian on.
Mm-hmm.
The host will usually play straight man or feed him lines. Or set up a story for the comedian to tell. It's not, you know, it's not as if the comedian suddenly comes up with this.
It's all about letting the
great old anecdote, you know.
It's all about making the host be the most important person in some way. You know, making him look good, him or her look good. You know. I used to love to watch Craig Ferguson when he used to tear up his cards before you interview the.
I thought Craig Ferguson was really underrated. I thought he was extremely funny. The other question is, how smart is Alex Trebek?
Exactly. I wonder if you played him today in Scrabble, whether you could beat him. I bet you could.
No, but how smart is he actually at Jeopardy? I mean, he makes it. If you want to watch a Jeopardy, you think, like, Alex Trebek probably knows the answer to everything. In reality, he probably doesn't know anything.
It's probably given to him, it probably is. It is interesting to speculate on that, and I'd love to play. See how intelligent he is. But when you play somebody, how soon can you tell that they know what they're doing?
Pretty soon. If they do something, use the blank to make a 15-point play or something like that, to waste the blank like that, then I know right away that they're not that kind of player. Something like that. There are signs. Things like that. They're little things you can tell. Just like you have tells in when you're playing poker with somebody, and things you can say and whatever. But
what I want to know is why there's no two-letter C words.
I mean, I don't know.
I continually need a two-letter C word, and there are no two-letter C words that I know of. And
not in North America. And there might be one, in some other language.
I don't even know. Is there a two-letter V word?
No.
Yeah. See, there's...
Again, not... I mean, something like VO is probably going to be good at some point for voiceover, but it isn't yet.
But it,
no, if you get the V, you got to get rid of that thing as soon as possible. So.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want a V in your rack.
I'm just happy to have ZA and QI in now, which is relatively new.
Right, exactly. Those are the big ones that you play you can make a lot of points off of, especially if you
just made 60-some points by playing ZA in a game this morning. So.
How often do you play?
Well, every day online.
Every day. That's amazing.
I have about 12 different people I play. And we're not playing it in real time. I go on, I see they made a move, I make my move, then it goes back to them. So it's never in real time, but maybe six times a day I'll go on and see who's made what move, and I'll make my move and kind of go that way.
Wait, is somebody reading this book going to become a better player?
They'll pick up some stuff from Word Nerd, but if they really want to be a better player, they really need to read everything Scrabble, because that's got more to it.
Now, there was a movie recently about Scrabble, I think, sort of like a documentary. I can't remember the name of it now.
Well, that was called Word Wars.
Word Wars.
Yeah, that was in 2005.
You must get really excited when you see those things coming out, something that really interests you. Oh, you were in it.
And then I also worked behind the scenes with the producers pretty heavily.
So now you're into acting, too.
Whatever they need me for. Yep.
Whatever is needed. I mean, do you suddenly, will you suddenly get a phone call asking you to be on the show? I mean, does that happen to you a lot?
It has happened.
And do you have an agent?
I don't have an agent for that. I have an agent for writing. I don't have an agent for acting or performing or anything like that. I mean, I basically was the national spokesperson for Scrabble for 25 or 30 years. So people would, basically they'd find me somehow, you know, on Wikipedia or some story or whatever, and then chase me down. So, or sometimes I try to get on a show.
Now, I think you also talk about movies with Scrabble in them. I think was the
there's a ton. Yeah.
But did you help with some of them?
I helped on a couple over the years. In the book, I write about the experience working on a movie called. Hold on a second.
Was it Wedding Planner?
Yeah, The Wedding Planner, right? It was Jennifer Lopez and Matthew McConaughey, and Jennifer Lopez's character is supposed to be a Scrabble tournament expert. It's pretty funny.
Did you help her out?
I tried. I didn't get, you know, when I first got involved, they asked me to be technical advisor. I was sure that I was going to, you know, be hanging out in Hollywood with J-Lo and Matthew McConaughey and all, but that never happened. So, I basically, it was my job, one of my jobs was to, anytime there was a request for, a tenuous request for permission to use Scrabble in a movie or a commercial or a television show, I was the one in charge of reading the script to make sure it was accurate and portrayed the game properly, that kind of thing.
You don't want Scrabble to be portrayed badly in movies, even, you know.
I must have seen five times scripts where some guy tries to pick up a girl in a bar and suggests they play strip Scrabble together. So.
Oh man.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, are you offended by Words with Friends? At all?
It's a long story. I have to some legal restrictions about me talking about it.
Really?
At the end of the day, I'm very happy that people play word games of any kind.
Right.
You know, but in some ways, Words with Friends never should have happened. So some people believe.
Right. But it is, like you said, it's the funness of it, the fact that people are having fun playing and building the vocabulary is definitely encouraging.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But the only thing that bothered me, people would, when I heard my job, they would say, oh, Scrabble, is that like Words with Friends? I'd say it's actually the other way around, but... yeah, that was the thing.
And people generalize a lot. Everything they see that's like something else, they instantly equate it. So it's like it's the same thing in their minds, even though it's not really the same at all. I mean, the Scrabble board, there's nothing as good as the Scrabble board. And, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I'm definitely a slob when it comes to word games, so, which is fine.
Plus, I mean, seeing a board, the fun that you get out of being with your friend and playing Scrabble and talking and the time that you spend with them, there's nothing that matches that to me online. I mean, you can play online. I'm not saying that online isn't a lot of fun. Of course it is.
I couldn't agree with more. Being overboard and, you know, hanging out with your friend and the tactile aspect of putting your hands in the bag and hoping to pull out a blank or a valuable tile, all that stuff, it can't be duplicated.
Yeah, that is, and I had a friend I used to do that with. At least once a week, we'd get together and play Scrabble. And, the fun you have of it can never be duplicated in my mind, and certainly with the person that I love to be around.
Let's hope it continues for another couple of generations.
So, who do you play? I mean, generally, who do you get to play with?
Online, I play a wide variety of people. I play friends who are very good players. Who are not in the tournament scene, and I play tournament players, and sometimes somebody will challenge me, and then I have in person. I have about four or five regular partners who live near I do. They're all very good players. Most of them. almost as good as I am, not quite. And then when I really want a reality check, I'll go into the New York City Scrabble Club, and as the Rolling Stones said, get my fair share of abuse.
you're very honest about that. It's wonderful. I just wonder, when you look at the seven tiles, can you see all the possibility of words, generally?
Pretty much, yeah.
You can?
Yeah.
Well, that's an advantage right then and there. I mean, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, the anagram. Well, I'm a pretty good natural anagrammer, but you also, over time, you become a good anagrammer to the point where you're anagramming street signs and people's names and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Now, you live in Greenport. That's part of Long Island, I see.
Yes, it's actually pretty rural. It's not the suburban Long Island. It's very much more like Cape Cod. I live in a little fishing village. It's 100 miles from New York City.
Now, what was this thing that happened on ESPN, this tournament, and how did that come about?
What happened was the first time we were televising a tournament on ESPN. And it was in New Orleans in 2004. We had 850 players from all over the world in the tournament. It was the biggest tournament in history. And we had there were certain words that could not be shown on television. So we had a list. But ESPN had some words, and then there were some words that we agreed as well should not be on. And what happened was the word Lez, L-E-Z, slipped through the people that were supposed to be watching. And while it's good in Scrabble tournament, it was not good on for television. So by order of ESPN and the sponsor. So we had to stop the play, figure out what to do, start over. It was all unprecedented. We had to make up what to do.
Now, was this a live TV show?
It was being taped.
It was being taped, okay. So they could go back and edit it and everything.
Right. So well, we stopped it right there, and we went back and made the players redraw and all that. One of the players was very upset, justifiably, because they didn't even think about it. They've been playing it for years.
So and it doesn't have that meaning that it does for other people, to them.
It's a pejorative term. It's considered a slur. It's considered a slur against gay women. So that's officially that. So, but it turned out there was a reporter there, and she couldn't resist it. She filed the story, and it kind of went viral. And then that's when I talk about in the book with the Jon Stewart show called The Daily Show. Wanted me to come on and talk about it, and he did not. So.
You never did go on the Jon Stewart show.
Not for that. No.
Oh, you did for another something else.
Oh, okay. Actually, no. I was never on that show. Mm-hmm. I've been to the show. I've met Jon Stewart, but I've not been on that show.
I wish they'd start another. I mean, eventually, it's going to come to the point where there's going to be another Scrabble game show. I'm surprised there hasn't been since.
They keep trying, but nobody gets it right. So, I don't know.
What would be entailed with getting it right?
Probably the right combination of smart. The one problem is you probably have to have a game show that's just an element of Scrabble. You couldn't have a game show where somebody comes on and plays a whole game. You just couldn't do that. You need more than an hour.
Right. So they'd have to miniaturize it somehow or make it a short game.
They'd have to do. You know, maybe you have three segments. One is make your best play, where they show you in the middle of a game, and here's your rack, and make your best play. Excuse me, sorry, my throat's a little tickly today. Another might be an anagramming segment. You know, where they put up flashcards and you know they put up the word seminar, and you have to do remains, marines. You know, all the words you can find in that.
Right.
And then some other. I don't know what else, some other segments. So that'd probably be the way to do it.
Have you ever had anybody quit on you because they realized that you were such a better player?
Yes.
You have. So you had that experience. That's kind of a weird experience. You kind of feel
not in a tournament.
Right, but yeah, online,
doesn't do that.
I'm sure it's happened online. People get very discouraged online very easily.
It has happened online.
Especially if they realize they don't have a shot. You know, it's not fun to lose. Let's face it, nobody wants to lose. I mean, it's not, but if you're learning while you're losing, that it makes all the difference in the world. I mean,
well, there's losing and then there's being humiliated.
Yeah, exactly. One of the two.
So no one wants to be humiliated, for sure.
So what do you do? Here's the situation. What do you do? You have a seven-letter word, and you can't place it on the board, and you think that if you let one or two turns go, you might be able to put it on. Do you wait the two turns and try to?
No.
You don't?
No. Well, first of all, in tournament play, if you pass, your opponent knows you have a seven-letter play, so they're going to make sure there's no place to play it.
Well, that's not easy to do in and of itself, is it?
What?
Make it so there's no place to put it.
Well, you just said that you have a seven-letter word and no place to play it. So what I would do as the opponent is I'll just play up one or two tiles for 10 or 12 points and keep the board shut down to prevent you from playing it.
Put
it in a place where you can't add an ass or you can't add a hook play or anything like that.
I didn't realize Scrabble could be that competitive. I guess you don't think of it that way, but I mean it's there, and I think of it while I'm playing, but it's still, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, the best thing to do is play off one or two tiles to try to open up a play, you know. So, maybe if there's an E somewhere, put an H in front of it, so then you could put make she or V or that kind of stuff.
And that's another thing I think about while I'm playing. I can set up for a triple word score in QI somewhere. I mean, in other words, make a word that has an I and then has a triple word score next to it. So the next round, you get that QI and you get another 30-some points. I mean,
assuming that it's not taken, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
we set ourselves up all the time.
And that's one of the real things that offends me about Words with Friends, the fact that the board is so tiny that almost everywhere you turn is another triple spot. So you're setting up, what you're doing is setting up for somebody else to take advantage of the triple space. So you can't. You can't really hide anything. Everything, no matter. And if you have a great word and it's right near the triple spot, you know they're going to get that triple spot. And
well, that's why I said Words with Friends is to encourage more scoring. Just so you get higher scores. There's a game called Super Scrabble that we tested, and we thought it was ridiculous, and said this is all it is, a Scrabble with four. I guess it's like Words with Friends. All it is, a Scrabble with another tile or two and more bonus squares and everything else, so that instead of scoring the usual 225 points, they're going to score 415 points. But it actually continues to do well, despite what we thought, because it's just more scoring. It's very American. Yeah, more scoring.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much that way.
Now, I assume you can actually beat the computer, too, when you play against the computer.
At the right level, yes.
But if you make
I have trouble with the very, very, very top level. I probably would only win 2 out of 10.
Well, that's
the
one
next
thing.
One.
I've managed to be able to beat the computer on Words with Friends. At first, it seems overwhelming because they always know the perfect word to put down. So.
Well, the one that I'm playing with has a lot of flaws. It doesn't. It goes for points only most of the time. Not best strategic move.
Do you remember words that are, if there were words played that you have never seen before? And I guess that probably doesn't happen a lot with you, but I mean, do you remember them? And do you have recall of those words?
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, I'll see a word that.
Have an amazing memory.
Not bad. There was, again, I didn't study words to the extent that a lot of people do.
Right.
But I usually remember stuff that I make an attempt to remember, and then sometimes stuff just creeps in by osmosis. I'll see something on the rack, and I'll say, "Boy, I've seen that word before."
Do you enjoy writing these books? I mean, how many books have you written now? You wrote everything Scrabble, and this one.
I've written these two, and then other stuff, non-game related, nor Scrabble related. But it was fun. The first one I wrote with a collaborator, Joe Edley, who's a 3-time national champion. And the guy that taught me.
I wrote
the first half, which is coming in off the street, thinking you like to play and might be a good player, all the way up to being a high intermediate, in the Scrabble world, which I was when we wrote it, and then Edley picked up from that point and then took it from there all the way to being a top expert. So that was fun.
Have you ever played a word and offended your opponent by the word?
Never happens.
Never happens?
No, people just shrug. Yeah, I know that's a terrible word, but it's the best play.
Right.
You know, I've had, you know, African Americans and Jews and Italians and gays or whatever group you want to talk about. We both played words that were offensive to them or would be in the real world, and we just look at each other. Sorry, my best play.
It's amazing. We've become a very sensitive society, very, very sensitive. And with all the online stuff that's said, I mean.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan with his rants, and everybody ranting now, and everybody saying, just speaking their mind online, not realizing that's going to be there for a long time.
That's right. You have to really be careful.
I mean, what do you want to say? You know, do you really want to say that? Do you really want to start trouble or whatever? You know, whatever
right.
it's going to start. I mean, there's so much. There just seems to be so much anger online a lot of times. I mean,
well, you have to assume whatever you're going to say is going to be out there, and it's going to be out there forever. So, you know. You really have to think about it.
I mean,
I've had many an email that, not many, but I've had a couple emails that I wouldn't mind taking back.
Yeah, and it's true. And then you go back and read some of the emails that you've sent, and you're like, well, why did I say that? What was wrong with me?
Right.
I mean,
right, exactly.
It's the same thing with writing in a diary. You write in a diary, and you look back like a year later, and you're like, oh my God, what was wrong with me? Why would I write that? Why would I even?
Well, you were vetting at the time, and it seemed like, you know, but you really got to think it through.
It's just fascinating. But how long did it take you to write this book, Word Nerd? I mean, from beginning to end?
About a year? Yeah.
A year of going, but how did you decide what to put in the book and what not to put in the book?
I did it by topic. At first it was going to be chronological. You know, here's how I started and taking it right on through. But then I realized there'd be many, many periods where it just wasn't that interesting. So I took instead what I thought were the 15 most important or 12 most important topics. You know, why are men better than women? How a word gets in the dictionary? Stuff like that. And when it went from there.
And I wonder, I know Colleen McCulloch was a big Scrabble player. She's a very famous, wrote the Thornbirds.
Yeah.
And are there a lot of celebrities that are into Scrabble?
There are. And there are a lot of state are into Scrabble because it's a way of, like wearing glasses when you don't need them. It's a great way to seem like an intellect.
I wonder how many presidents have been into Scrabble.
Well, I know the Clintons were very into it. And, the Obamas played. We got a very nice letter from Obama one time.
Really?
Those are the only ones that I know of. But a lot of celebrities. Jack Black is a big player, I know. John Stewart plays a bit. Who else plays? Just a bit. More than you think. More than you think. We got a lot of musicians.
Hmm. Because they have people that have downtime. They're on the road a lot, I guess, would be.
Beastie Boys were huge Scrabble fans.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to play a Beastie Boy in Scrabble. You know?
I would love to do that, yeah. I could probably make that happen. Well, the one that Adam Horowitz, the one who died about 3 years ago, was the biggest Scrabble fan, although the other ones played.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that. But. I'm not up on my Beastie Boy trivia.
Well, neither am I, really. I've just extended everything I know about the Beastie Boys in this conversation.
That's right. That's better. Well, the good thing about you is you're easy to talk to. You're not uppity at all. I mean, and I would assume there are some really uppity people that play Scrabble that probably, you know, are not the very sociable people because they're...
That's true. The best player in the world, best player in history, will never do an interview, will never...
Really?
You won't talk to a reporter, nothing. Nope.
Well, you seem like a regular guy, which is really refreshing. I mean, it's...
I am. Well, remember, my job was to be... I'm sort of a liaison between these, you know, the Scrabble scene and whatever, and just the rest of the world, you know, the press and other people and whatever. So that was my job. I also had to spread the word about Scrabble, no pun intended. You know, start the school Scrabble program... All that stuff. So,
What are the, what
reasons
are...
I'm not a champion is because I have a regular... The reason I'm not a champion is because I also, you know, like exercise. I was a basketball player for many years. And, you know, I write other stuff, so... you know, I don't study. If you want to be a top player, you have to devote at least 3 or 4 hours a day to Scrabble.
Now, what are the letters in your mind that you should dump as soon as you can when you get them? I think you said V was one of them, right? And is I another one?
No, I's useful.
I's useful.
Yeah. Although I's tend to be one of those ones where I end up being more than one I, tends to happen a lot. And that's where it's good to know what's called the vowel dump list, which is words like T-I-P-I, things along those lines. But the things you really want to get rid of as soon as you get them, for the most part, are the V, the W, U. C is not great to work with, that kind of stuff.
V, W, and C, okay.
Right. But, you know, the things you want, obviously the S and the blank are the most valuable. E's are great. You know, T, just things that are workable.
So, it's always great to challenge your mind. I mean, we live in a society where, you know, where everybody's texting and talking on their phones, and to be able to sit down and use that mind of yours for what, you know, it's such a great thing. I mean, to give that up, I can't even imagine not having some kind of word. I mean, I'm totally fascinated with words, whether it be on game shows or books or whatever. And we all know when we get to a word we don't understand, it's kind of frustrating. It's like you got to stop your reading and look up a word. It can be very frustrating, you know, if you don't know.
Well, I don't read digitally. I'm still an old-fashioned book guy, but I guess, you know, there's an app or whatever. When you're reading a book and there's a word you don't know, you can just highlight it, and it'll tell you the margin. It'll tell you what's meaning.
Well, I don't know what your age is, and I don't know if I want to ask your age.
That's all right. I'm just almost 69.
Are you serious?
I am.
You sound like you're about 35.
I know, I hear that all the time. Well, I work hard to...
There's no way you're 69.
I'm not young. thank you. I'm not young, but I like to try to be youthful at least. So.
I can't believe that you're that... your picture doesn't even... I mean, you look so much younger.
Yeah, I'm lucky that way. So
I'm floored. I had no idea you were going to say that.
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
But I mean, as you get older, is it harder to remember words?
Well, it's hard to remember everything.
That's true. But I mean, do you find that you forget words? You seem to have a quick grasp of words, though. I mean,
no, I'm more likely to forget my car keys than I am to forget the keywords without you.
But I'm sure you've played a game where you've forgotten a word, a key word that you could have used.
That's definitely happened. Or the thing you want to avoid is somebody plays a word that you should know and you challenge it and you lose the term. That's happened a couple times. So, as a rule, I pretty much retain most of the words that I've learned. Again, words that are I will only use in Scrabble. That's the thing about it. I think in the book there's a story about the word Umiak, which is an Eskimo canoe.
Right.
Spelled U-M-I-A-Q. It's very unusual. It ends with a Q and begins with a U.
Mm-hmm.
And the story, I guess you read the book, so, but, I had a friend that I played Scrabble with all the time, and this is a word you would never use in your everyday. One would go, unless one lived in Alaska, one would go their entire life without ever using this word. But I had a friend who went to Greenland on vacation, who was a Scrabble player, and when he left the airport, there was a sign out front that said Umiak for rent, and he like almost crashed his car. He couldn't. It's like, I think in the book I say it's like a devout Christian seeing an image of the Virgin Mary on a piece of toast or something like that. It's it's this crazy. Here's this word that you know, and probably only 10,000 people know this word, and suddenly you see it in the real world. It's like a crazy thing. So that's definitely geek stuff, but.
Well, you knowing so many words, I mean, it's a huge help when you read. I don't know how many books you read a year. In a typical year, how many books would you read? Or are you not a big reader?
No, maybe 20. I mean, I read I'm always reading. I read a lot of magazines, but I'm usually, I read probably 2 books a month. So,
that's
not, thank you.
But I often talk to men about reading, and a lot of men are into nonfiction books, which is fine. I've always been fascinated by that you don't find a lot men who read fiction an awful lot. I mean, there are a lot of them, but you don't.
Right.
For the most part, a lot of people I talk to read nonfiction, and they love nonfiction.
Yeah.
But occasionally, you'll come across the men who will read fiction. I love fiction.
I read a lot of fiction. I read a lot of contemporary fiction is probably the first thing I like reading most, and then I'll read maybe biography or I'm somewhat of a movie buff, so I might read a Woody Allen book on movies or something like that. But fiction is what I enjoy the most.
The great thing about being a writer is it doesn't matter what age you are. You can be...
Well, that's right.
You can be 97. Right. Mary Higgins Clark's, I think, approaching 90 years old and still writing
best-selling mysteries,
you know, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but if you're a writer working in television or movies, which both of which I have done, you come with an expiration date. They think anybody over 50 years old is incapable of writing a good television show. Absolutely.
I didn't realize it was that cutthroat.
I've been in so many meetings, like at TV networks or at Paramount or somewhere, where I'm like the oldest person, not only in the meeting, in the entire building. So when I was 50, I started hooking up with younger collaborators. And just that was the only way I could do it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I have a friend who wrote... won a bunch of Emmys for writing Cheers and Seinfeld and all this kind of stuff. When he goes now to submit a script, he leaves those things off his resume, because the first round of people reading it will be, wait, this guy wrote for Seinfeld, he's got to be 65 years old.
Isn't that awful how we judge people by age now?
Terrible, yeah, it's terrible. But
it is a terrible thing.
It's really true in that business.
And people joke about old age and how you forget things as you get older. But I mean, it's really tiresome after a while. It's like, why can't we just treat people for
especially when you get there?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, let's not be nasty and mean to people who are older than. Let's respect them like they do overseas.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Let's have some high respect. That's fascinating though, that he has to leave it off his resume. It's something huge that he's done.
Exactly. Yeah, crazy.
It's just what kind of a show would you like to write for today? If you had your pick of any TV show you could write for, what would it be?
That's a good question. Probably, I don't really like episodic TV. That's like a killer, you know, where you're just so hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a one-off guy. I really like, I have written TV shows, but I really like screenplays. That's what I like writing best.
So you'd like, if somebody approached you about writing a movie for TV, that would excite you?
Yes. Yeah.
But they don't do, it's funny because they do miniseries. They don't do much of a way of movies unless it's on like a Hallmark channel or something. And a lot of times they tend to be sappy, you know?
Yeah, well, HBO and Netflix, it's a whole new ballgame now, actually. It's really, TV is where...
That's true. HBO does a lot of stuff with
movies. And Netflix and Amazon, and there's all these people now that it's actually a very good time for creative types. There's a lot more platforms available.
When you approach these people, if you would approach them about doing a screenplay, they would look at your age and think it was a minus. Or a negative.
Yes.
That's really terrible.
It'd be a lot harder. So, unless I've...
Well, I guess they're investing money and they don't want to have a bad investment if you turned out to be somebody who didn't know what they were doing. But, I mean, that's...
It's a business. You know, what people don't realize how much it is a business. I mean, the chances are much better making Nightmare on Elm Street 18 than the best original thing you ever saw. You know, one of my favorite movies is American Beauty with Kevin Spacey, and because I thought that was a perfect blend of something that was smart and sort of art housey, but also commercial that the average moviegoer would enjoy it as well. And the thing that I always loved about that movie, it was written by a guy that had never written a screenplay, and it was directed by a guy who had never directed a movie.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You have to cheer on those success stories. I remember when Matt Damon and Ben Affleck wrote Good Will Hunting, which was such a great movie.
I mean,
especially for Robin Williams. As far as I'm concerned, the best thing Robin Williams ever did.
I would agree, because he didn't overact. But
he was just a real person, and you really felt for this man, you know, and you really just felt the emotions just going through him.
There were a lot of rumors on that movie that there's one of the four or five most famous screenwriters ever was William Goldman. Who was also a script doctor, a very, very high-paid script doctor. There were a lot of rumors in the business that William Goldman had his hand in Good Will Hunting in the script.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Especially when they never wrote anything again.
Yeah, exactly. That was like one and done, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Not that they haven't, you know, they've done great work in other ways, but these guys, I don't think, have written another script.
I think, and that's the thing. I think Matt Damon has some talent. Some of the movies he does, I'm like, what? Are you kidding me?
Well, there's this dynamic in the movie called One for the Man, One for You. So like Ben Affleck will do like some stupid romantic comedy, but then that enables him to make what was the one about the Iran hostages?
Argo. Argo.
Argo. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's a very common MO in the business. So Ben Affleck will say, okay, I'll do this romantic comedy with Meg Ryan or whatever, and in return, I want $15 million to make a movie of my choice, and I want to direct it. And that's the way something like that happens. That's kind of common.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, the talk shows are changing. I think I read the other day Seth Meyers is going to start having authors on his show, and I thought, oh, that's really cool. And I know Craig Ferguson was doing that before he retired. He had Lawrence Block and Michael Connelly. I'm like, this is really cool.
Yeah. It's rare, though. It's very rare to see an author on a late-night talk show.
And you look at them, and they almost seem out of place because you don't see it very often. If you see it on the Today Show, they're on for 2 minutes, and they push them off. You know, they're done.
Yeah. There's nothing of substance, really. So
I mean, I've actually interviewed Michael Connelly, so I know what he's like. I know what a terrific human being he is, and he's always been that way. But, you know, you see them on the talk show, and they seem like, oh, God, they're a little awkward because they've never done this before. You know, it's like, who asked them to be on a talk show, you know?
Well, they're also asking them, in 2.5 minutes to give you everything that he has to say about his book, and that you just can't do that.
I get a chance to interview authors and tell them what I think of their books and how wonderful that is, and to be able to hear their reaction to it and the joy that they get out of hearing that is
it's great when someone's read it and really got it. It's terrific. It's really
I can remember there was one author in particular I interviewed, and I remember his wife answered the phone, and I thought, oh God, this is going to be a nightmare because the guy doesn't even answer the phone. And he came on, and I could hear in his voice how he did not want to do the interview. And I thought, this is going to be awful.
That's great.
We did, I think, almost an hour interview. By the time we were done, he was telling me what he read. He was excited. Uh-huh. He couldn't believe that I had this much interest in his book. The joy that I made just talking to that man for an hour meant everything to me, and I know it meant a lot to him because he was telling me what he reads on the beach, and I'm like, no, nobody ever does that, you know.
That's fantastic. Well, what happens is, it just happened to me on this book. I was being interviewed by someone of substance in a situation, and I realized 2 minutes into it that the person had not read the book.
Ooh.
You know, if anything, he had read maybe the jacket cover or a press release, you know, but he had not read the book for sure. And so that was off-putting, you know.
Absolutely. When you don't, there's no interest, and they're just doing it, you know, as whatever they're doing it for. And it's exposure, and you're thankful for the exposure, but the interest is what, when you've taken, you took a year of your life to write this book, And that doesn't seem like a long time, but it is. I mean, here's a long, you know, a fairly decent amount of time
right.
to write a book.
Right.
I mean, when you've put your heart and soul into something and then people care about it, that makes all the difference in the world.
Right. It also makes the interview, then I have to drive the interview. Then I have to say, okay, this guy's not going to ask me the kind of question that's going to get people to go out and buy the book or pique their interest, so I'm going to have to manipulate my answers in a way to get these points in.
Well, I can be honest and tell you that one of the reasons I wanted the interview was to get some pointers for my birds and friends with them.
This isn't about reading my book, it's about being a better Scrabble player.
Well, that was in my mind, I can be honest with you and say that, because it's true. I mean, I was standing in Barnes & Noble, I saw the book, I thought, and the first thing I think of is, oh, I hope this hasn't been out very long, because if it has, I won't be able to get the interview. And that's something
yep.
I have to think about, because you know, everything's done right away, and two
exactly.
months down the line, they're on to the next book.
It's true.
It works the same with movies and
well,
TV.
Well, I'm going out with reviews now. I realized I was talking to the publicist at Norton the other day. I said, where are we in the cycle of this? And he basically said, the reviews are going to dry up pretty much right now. You know, so it's going to be more about doing more press, but the review is probably done. So
well, that's the thing. How do you get on these different shows? How do you promote yourself so you can? I mean, you could have a real fun time with like Jimmy Fallon. I mean, Jimmy Fallon's a terrific guy.
Yeah, he is great. He's fantastic. He was just here in my little town about a month ago.
There's something about him. I couldn't tell you what it was, but there's something real about that man that I really enjoy. And
I agree. He is an everyman quality. He's just unbelievably approachable.
But I could see him playing like Scrabble on his show, like with the celebrities, and how much fun that would be to watch. You know, just
yeah,
like
well, I did it with Jimmy Kimmel a couple times, and that was a lot of fun. And he's a pretty good guy too.
Yeah, he seems like the type of guy. If you saw him on the street, he'd shake your hand, say hello.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely that way.
Whereas, I'm not so sure Johnny Carson would have been that way, but
no, Letterman's not that way either, and Jon Stewart really isn't that way. You know, it just depends on the guy.
But we've been talking.
Scrabble on TV is tricky because it's a lot of dead time. Yeah.
We've almost hit an hour. That's amazing, and you're just a lot of fun to talk to. I can't wait till you write the next book.
Yeah. Me neither. I don't know what it's going to be. It's not going to be about Scrabble.
Well, that's half the fun of life when we don't know what's coming next. If we knew what was coming next, how boring would that be? Unless we knew we were going to win the lottery or something, you know? Maybe that would. I always found that fascinating about Roseanne, that show Roseanne, when they won the lottery.
Yeah.
I thought,
that was a brilliant show, by the way. She's really I mean, no, she's crazy, but...
She is crazy.
But she's brilliant. She really is.
But you know what? She doesn't care that she's crazy. She's just crazy.
So, yeah.
And
she's very smart and very talented. But
and now she's in, like, Hawaii doing things. Like, what's she doing in Hawaii? You know, it's like... But it's been so great to talk to you, John. Now, you're not related to John Williams, the movie soundtrack guy, are you?
No, but I get that a lot, yeah. I've gotten some great restaurant reservations, so I'll say that much for it.
Is John Williams still alive? I think he is.
Yes, yeah, he is.
He must be about...
His friends call him Ike.
Really?
I have a mutual friend with him, yeah, and apparently everybody calls him Ike.
I am totally fascinated by the fact that you can watch a movie and listen to his soundtrack and just say, you know, this is perfect for this movie. How does he do it? How the heck can he watch a movie and come up with a perfect soundtrack every time?
What they say in the business is that the best soundtrack is you don't even realize it.
Exactly. You're just watching the movie and enjoying
it. Yeah, you don't even know. Yeah, you're not even thinking about it. I mean, when you think about it, how often do you really say, wow, the soundtrack's great. But, you know, it's more that it's everything sort of blends together. It's so harmonious and all that. Anyway, I enjoyed this as well.
Yeah, this was great fun. The book again is called Word Nerd, Dispatches from the Games, Grammar, and Geek Underground. And it's out from Live Right in all your bookstores now. Thank you very much.
Really my pleasure, and I hope I'll chase you down next time I write a book.
Great. And this has been Dave's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.